Morning. How are we? So 9 kids, right? That's the punchline, a little bit there. And how you get there is in your early 20s, or rather in your early teens, you meet this amazingly beautiful redhead. And about 2 weeks into dating her, you go, yeah, no, I think she's the kind of girl that I want to marry. And then you date through high school, you get married, you get engaged in high school, by the way, and then you get married, and you start with your first biological child at about 21 and start fostering children at age 22, and then you do that for about 10 or 15 years, and you add biological kids as you go, and that's kind of how that piles up if you're doing the math. And so we ended up caring for, over the past 15, 20 years of our marriage, caring for something like 30 kids, ages 0 all the way up to our oldest, who's now 26. Kyle, can you give me? Yeah, so there's 7, 8 of the 9 of us. Our oldest son's in the military in this picture, and he's got three kids. So I'm a grandparent in my mid-30s as well, also a punchline in the event that you're looking for laughs. It's just been this amazing adventure that my wife and I have been on, and it's sufficient to say that God's plans are better than our plans, right? I thought I'd have that 2.5 kids, and that I'd be a high school basketball coach and a teacher, and I've never used my history degree for really anything other than impressing my kids with some information that's come along. And so I want to take some time this morning really to just kind of help us think through what it looks like to discipline our children, what it looks like to care for them well, and start by just setting the stage with a passage out of Hebrews 12, verses 4 through 13. I'll probably read just verses 5 through 11. But it says, "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord's discipline, the one he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father if you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline? Then you're not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it." My wife and I, back in 2015, had the opportunity to travel the country for a year. We had founded a nonprofit here in Collin County and really engaged with churches that were saying, hey, would you come train us how to engage and care for the vulnerable children and families in our area? And so we rented out our 3,000 square foot house for a year. We took our 12-passenger van and we pulled a 35-foot travel trailer all across the country. We went as far north as Quebec and Seattle and as far south as Tampa and even into Mexico, like the Tecate, Tijuana area, which, just by the way, Tijuana after night's a bad idea for a family of 10. Just had an amazing experience, but, you know, a lot of it was just kind of built up on this idea of sort of the adrenaline of the moment and the opportunity. Do I have any friends that have ever owned or lived out of a travel trailer for maybe even just a weekend, an RV type of thing? Then you probably know where this story is going. It wasn't so much that the sleeping arrangements were bad. I mean, we did have to like set up and tear down a pack and play for our 2-year-old. He took a header off of the stairs one time, which was not pleasant. But, it wasn't even the kitchen area. Like, it's this tiny little kitchen. And, you know, anytime that, we're cooking in there, you knew the meal was ready when smoke was just engulfing the entire cabin. But you cannot make that bathroom big enough. Right? And so every single night, I'm asleep kind of up in where the master bedroom is in this thing. And you can hear that little door kind of squeak open. And with so many people in there, right, that thing's open and closing 2 or 3 times a night. And inevitably, about 2 or 3 a.m., I'll have a child kind of, you can kind of feel them as they're walking up to you. And they pull that little curtain back. Dad. need the bathroom again, right? And it was atrocious. And so there were multiple times throughout our trip that I'm just like up to my shoulders in our waist. And I realized that the story itself is a little juvenile, but the reality was that was some of the most humbling, most sacrificial experiences that I had with our kids, just making sure that, you know, the entire house was not engulfed in that stuff. And so I'm often like reminded of, we're dealing with a plumbing issue right now in our backyard that I'm once again reminded and brought back to the days when we'd pull up into a campsite and we'd set up and there it is again. And it's like, hey, we've got to take care of this. But the humility and sacrifice that's required from us as fathers is typically something that we didn't count the cost for whenever we became fathers. It was sort of like I know I'm going to have to change diapers. But beyond that, I'm really hoping my kids are just going to kind of, you know, once they learn how to tie their shoes, once they learn how to feed themselves, that they're just going to grow up. And yet for many of us, in not counting the cost, we also fail to really cultivate the soil, if we can use this illustration, kind of following this harvest of righteousness idea, but cultivating the soil of our children's hearts so that the roots of the gospel can grow deep. Because that's ultimately what we're talking about is there's lots of blocking and tackling that we can talk about in regards to discipline of like, okay, so how do we do, how long should we do timeouts? Should we spank our kids? Should we not spank our kids? But the determining factor of whether or not your child's going to be disciplined or not isn't going to be whether you choose to spank them. It's not going to be choosing or timing how long they go to timeout or when and all those kinds of things. The determining factor is going to be how you and your wife discipline yourselves and address your own impatience and address your own idols so that you don't start imparting some things to your kids that they start picking up and living by that don't reflect who God is. And so I want to share really as we kind of unpack that, three principles that have helped me slay some of these idols along the way that I think we all have that have really transformed me as a father, have transformed my life as well as a follower of Christ. Because otherwise we continue this sort of epidemic of passivity that a lot of us had, or this perpetual adolescence that's living on as our kids are kind of looking back at us and going, look, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it means. To be a child in this family, or I don't know what it is or means to be a mom or a dad or a husband or a wife. I'm looking for a model to follow, and you're that model that they're looking to follow, that they're taking their cues from. And so the first idol that I want to address, one is the idol of experience, and it's one that we all we're looking at our fathers or our father's fathers or our mothers and kind of picking up cues from them, right? Ephesians 6:4 says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. We tend to kind of think through that and go, okay, so don't be overbearing and, you know, don't bellow or yell at the kids. You know, don't stand over them. If you've ever done this, this is one that I think I was really good at. I used to, you know, jump onto a kid. I'd kind of separate them out from the pack, right? Sort of this divide and conquer mentality. And, you know, they'd be in a hallway and I go, you know, you go over there and think about what you're going to, you know, what you've done. And you know, I want you to really process. And this is like a 3-year-old kid who's like, I don't know what process means. And you know, I'm standing over them and there's this sort of towering, imposing figure, right? That we are as men and as fathers. You know, and we're using all these big words, impressing them with our college education. And our child in the meantime is just, what do they say? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Because they know by saying yes, sir, we're not going to be more angry until we realize they're just saying yes, sir, to keep us from being angry, which only makes us more angry, right? But there we are, and I'm, you know, standing over my kids just imposing you know, and I'm asking them to explain yourself to me. Why would you do that? And these experiences that I had as a kid, I'm passing on to my children. And so we tend to think of this as kind of exasperating our kids. Or we tend to think of the dad who spanks his child too often or who's heavy-handed. And yet many of us are way more passive than we are heavy-handed. And it's that passivity that exasperates our children as well. It's the child that comes up and is regularly tugging on your shirt sleeve and going, hey, dad, I want to show you something, dad, right? And it's incessant. And it's like, look, kid, I cannot give you all of my attention 24/7. Just give me a moment to breathe. I promise I'll come look at whatever it is that you drew. And, you know, admittedly, right? Sometimes we've got to pretend to be impressed. And so we walk over and it's like, that is the most beautiful unicorn that I have ever seen someone color. Lovely. You're going to be an artist someday, right? And yet, that passivity of, man, kid, if you would just leave me alone, I'm just not that into you, is often what our kids hear. And yet they have no idea. They're seeking that attention. They're seeking that affection from us. Another typically one that I picked up from my dad is sort of just this avoidance, where he was just constantly busy. And so when he wasn't at work, he was out in the garage working. And it was sort of like, you know, son, you're still too little. And so why don't you just play basketball in the driveway? I'm going to work on the truck. Or you just play your video games. I'm going to go be on the computer in my room. I mean, for many of us, it's our phone where we can't disconnect from that thing. And so we're effectively telling our kids, like, hey, you take care of yourself. I'm going to take care of me. And whenever I want to engage with you, I will. But I'm just not that into you. And that kind of passivity leads to overreaction in us. It leads to that heavy-handedness. Because that child who's tugging on our sleeve, we eventually get annoyed and we erupt. And I didn't see this play out in my family any more than when one of my daughters was about 12 or 13. And so, you know, it was sort of about the time that she could watch her younger siblings. And so my wife and I were like, oh, this is great. We can go on date nights. We don't have to hire a sitter. It's just kind of built in and this is going to pan out. And so we would go on our dates and we'd come back. And the younger kids would be like, man, dad, you've got to talk to Kate. Like she berated us. She wouldn't let us get. I had to spend the rest of my night in my room. And I said, well, I told, hey, she's in charge. You know, I don't want to undermine the authority that I've set in place. So she's in charge. You got to listen to her. You got to be respectful. Blah blah blah. And this went on for weeks and weeks, until one day I was sitting at home, and because I'd empowered my 12-year-old with some authority, she felt like, oh, now I've got this opportunity all the time. And she would, I'm home. Right? And my kids are walking through, they're doing something, and she'd jump on them. And so I got to see it firsthand. And I went, man, she is incredibly impatient. Why is she berating her sibling like this? And it started to dawn on me that this was an example that I had set for my daughter, that she was now imparting to her siblings. That our kids didn't pick up some model of exasperation or some model of being heavy-handed or belittling others from TV or from anywhere else. That this overreaction from my middle school daughter, who's trying to keep things under control, was something that I had shown her, and that I had to spend a lot of time, and still do, frankly, repenting from. I have met with Kate a number of times where I've just said, hey, Kate, you've learned this from me. It's not a good model to follow. It's not going to serve you well in marriage or friendships or in parenting. You don't get to look at your little siblings, and I think this is a really poignant insight. You don't get to look at your siblings and go, they make me so mad, and give them control over how you feel. Because when we empower others to control our emotions, we totally let go of the reins and just go, well, now this 2-year-old, now this 3-year-old, now this 10-year-old is the one who's actually in charge, and I'm just at the whims of their behaviors. And so the question I think for each of us to kind of weigh in on is one, what are your scars? What are the scars that were passed down to you from a father, from a grandfather, from a mother? Maybe it was because of absence, or maybe it was passivity, or maybe it was heavy-handedness. What are the scars that were passed on to you, and what are the scars you're passing on to your kids? The second passage that... or the second idol, rather, that comes to mind, and that has certainly, we could address a number of them, but the second one that really impacted me was the idol of expectations. I think we all realize that we are sinners raising sinners who were raised by sinners. And so the rebellion of our children is certain. If we thought that our kids were going to come out of the womb just worshiping us and going, "Dad, you've got it all figured out, and I'm just going to follow your every word, and I'm going to move at the exact pace that you set for me, and I'm never going to question your authority. I'm always just going to rely on what you provide and how you direct me, and I'm going to believe everything that you say, even if it's contradictory to your actions," right? That just does not exist. And yet we often forget that our kids are sinners, right? Born with this sinful nature, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And yet in their sinfulness, they're often, again, looking for a model to follow. And so if you'll entertain me for just a minute, I'm not going to ask you to like stand up or anything, but if you'll just kind of take your fist and tuck your thumb into your fist, this is just a model that was sort of developed and an illustration developed by a guy named Daniel Siegel, who wrote a book called The Whole Brain Child. And Dr. Siegel just kind of uses this to talk about how parents can impact a child's behavior and really where a child's kind of operating from, okay? And the base of the fist here is what represents the brainstem, okay? If I can nerd out for just a second with you. This area of the brain really controls some of our very basic life functions. So hunger, thirst, breathing, blood pressure, body temperature, all these kind of things are functioning right here. This is the area of the brain that develops first. It's super strong when we're young because it's the survival mechanisms of just life in general. And especially children who've been exposed to drugs in utero or children who've been traumatized, man, this thing is hardwired in. We've got no problems with kids going, "Man, I need to eat." So much so that they'll often hoard and hide food. Or "I need to survive." So much so that they may lash out at somebody else when there's actually no threat at all. And so this little area right here is where our kids kind of start when they develop in life. This area up here is called the prefrontal cortex. You can impress your friends and coworkers later with that if you'd like. And this area is where like all the higher level executive functioning kind of comes in, right? That reason. And it's not that our kids don't have that. It's just that it doesn't actually get fully hardwired in until you're about 25. And so let that sink in. Because some of you are kind of like, "Oh, that's why I am the way I am," right? Because we're still developmentally a 25-year-old who's still kind of figuring it out. And so here, again, that executive functioning, but our kids don't really access that so much because typically they're operating out of this middle brain, this reptilian brain that is, again, to impress your friends, known as the limbic system. All right? And it's where your fight, flight, or freeze response is. It's kind of the emotional center of your brain. And when a child feels afraid, or when they're like really pinging off the walls and just kind of, you know, I don't know what to do with myself. I'm just super excited, or I'm a super afraid, or I'm super stressed out. They're not connected at all here, and we call it flipping your lid. That a child literally does not have access to this higher level thinking, and so. When we're that overbearing dad, "What were you thinking?" Our child's are like, "I don't know. I guess I wasn't." right? And we keep hammering on, what were you thinking? Explain yourself to me. And our kid the whole time is just operating out of the, man, I'm just frozen right here. And our opportunity as dads, as we go back to this sort of idol of expectation that we think our child's gonna work through it, we think they're gonna start to kind of calm down themselves and they're gonna start to process through some of the details, man, they're not going to get there. And for many of you who have experienced this with me, you're like, man, why couldn't my kid make it out of that situation? Why couldn't they come up with a conclusion? Why couldn't they answer the question why? Because our child was stuck right there and they didn't have a calm, patient, loving parent to come alongside them and go, hey, let me just help you reconnect some of what you're feeling to what you're thinking so we can start to take steps together. Because discipline should not be illogically punitive, right? Even the idea of timeout in general, and I'm not like an anti-timeout kind of guy, but the idea of timeout is, hey, kid, go over there and you figure it out by yourself. When all the while a child's going, well, I got here because I was by myself. I made this decision because you had left me alone and I didn't have parental supervision. I didn't have somebody to walk alongside me and say, hey, you probably don't want to put your finger or your hand on that stove. That's going to be a bad idea. Or you probably don't want to jump off that roof. You probably don't, right? That they didn't have somebody that could see ahead of where they were going and go, hey, this isn't a great idea. Let me disciple you and let me walk alongside you. But instead, so many of us, again, the sort of illogically punitive discipline that just says, you know what, I'm angry with the behaviors that you're exercising. And so I'm gonna spank you and send you to your room. Because discipline and love are consequential. And so we have to train ourselves beyond just this swift justice mentality. It feels good, right? As fathers, if we're really honest, it feels good because it's mostly convenient for us to just spank our kids and send them away. But if we're going to love our kids and discipline our kids like the Father disciplines us, then we're gonna be patient with our kids, we're gonna meet them where they're at, and we're gonna model what that can look like. We're gonna model healing for them and help them kind of reconnect to some of these thoughts. The last idol that has come to mind, and I think it's one that personally for me is continually the idol that I have to slay, and it's the idol of ease. It's the one that says a child should be seen and not heard. It's the one that says, you know what, kid, if you just be quiet and convenient, I'll come play with you when I'm ready. Don't misbehave when I'm not ready because I won't be able to help you then. I'll just send you away. A child may submit to you out of fear, but we don't really see that as the example that God has in mind for us. There is certainly a measure of respect that we see throughout scripture as God talks about what our relationship with him is like. But very rarely, apart from maybe the passage in Job where God steps forward and just goes, now brace yourself like a man, right? So I'm not saying that there aren't those opportunities as a dad. If you're like ever waiting for, like, when do I get to tell my kid to brace himself like a man, right? Man, I'm really looking forward to that day with my kids. But it's like the pinnacle of fatherhood. But the opportunity to come alongside your kids and go, you know what? I'm not looking for a slave. I'm not trying to raise up a servant. Jesus says in John 15:15, I've come not that you would be my servants, but that you would be friends. Because your kids are going to grow up. They're going to become adults where they make their own choices, where they're not under your roof. And if all you've done is trade them to fear and submit to you when they're in your home, whenever that fear and submission is thrown off, whenever they move out, we've not entirely given them the skills and the tools to make logical, disciplined choices when there's not that fear and submission kind of suppressing all of their ingenuity and creativity in life. And so we have to recognize that in this sort of concept, this idea of this idol of ease, that often what our children are asking is, like, Dad, when are you going to show me attention? When am I going to be prioritized in your life? When am I more important than your phone? When am I more important than your fantasy football league? When am I more important? Or when are you going to invite me into those things? Because I see that you're really engaged in them. And so I think love can be spelled two ways. We probably heard the first one, T-I-M-E. But a lot of what our kids are doing as they're developing, especially in the younger years, but also in the older years, love can be spelled P-L-A-Y. Like, one of the best things that our family does right now is play knockout. And my kids think I am a golden god, right? Because we lower that thing down to like 7 feet because I've got like a 5-year-old who can't shoot on a 10-foot basket, but we lower that thing down and I get to dunk like every single time. My kids think it's amazing. And when I let them win, they are just elated. And because your children long for your attention and affection. And it's in that connection that we actually start to experience and see them long for discipline. I came home from work. This is back like 3 or 4 years ago. And you've had one of those weeks where sort of the hardest day, you walk in and you just like dragged your briefcase or, you know, your bag or whatever, or your coat, and just kind of you dropped it right at the threshold. Kind of walked in, slammed the door, and looked for the nearest chair to sit down in. I'm assuming we've all had these days. Well, this was one of those days for me, and I walked in, and from the living room, you know, our 3-year-old son kind of heard me, and he comes running, right? And I'm like, please don't jump. But he jumps up, right? And he's got his hands the entire way. They're held up high, and he comes running. He jumps into my arms, and I lift him up, and he just gives me this huge hug, right, from this little 3-year-old body. And he just kind of held me for a little bit. And then he leans back, and he says, Daddy, I missed you. I was looking for you. And it was in that moment that God did this just heinous thing in my heart, right, where he just softened me. He said, your kids are longing for your attention. They're longing for your affection. And I get to look right back at him and I go, man, I missed you. I was looking for you too. And it's super sweet when your 3-year-old does that. And I can promise you, when my 15-year-old daughter that was really having a hard time in middle school was just struggling through life and her identity and what it looked like to be a woman of God, what it looked like to be cared for and treasured as she's trying to keep up with the Joneses in her school. She's trying to be the popular kid. She's trying to be the talented kid. She didn't want a hug or a kiss from Dad anymore. That I got to come alongside her and just grab her by the arm and say, hey, I think you're really struggling right now. And you're pushing me away by trying to become independent. You're pushing me away. You're pushing your mom away. You're pushing your siblings away. I'm telling you, we miss you. And we're looking for you. Man, her heart just melted. And every so often, she comes back to that, even today, and just says, hey, Dad, can I just get a hug? I'm like, yeah, you can. And your kids are longing for your affection and attention. So we think about how we discipline our kids. It's not how do we become more tactical. It's how we become more relational. And as I'm thinking back on those times in our camper, as we're driving along and we're moving from, you know, sometimes hours on end, and we'd show up in a spot and everybody's got to go to the bathroom all at once. I love that I get to end with this such a juvenile illustration. But, you know, we get shops set up there And, you know, we're ready to kind of rock and roll. And all of a sudden it's, "Dad, I need help in the bathroom again." For as disgusting as the experience is, I'm so glad that my kids know they can come ask me for help. And I'm also so glad that after I had figured out how to get it all cleaned out, I got to go, "Come alongside with me and help, let me model for you what this looks like so that you can join in the blessing of cleaning this out."